Morning. Seems tight here this morning for some reason. I don't know what it is. I'm going to speak today on Dana Paramita, which is the paramita or perfection of giving. Last time I talked about another paramita. There are six or ten. But there are six that I'm going to touch upon over time. The Dana Paramita is the first, and the last time I talked about Kshanti Paramita, which is forbearance or forgiveness. The paramitas or perfections are considered inspirations or virtues. There are six of them. In some accountings, there are ten. They actually go back to classical Buddhism, but they became more important in the Mahayana. But they have existed for pretty much as long as Buddhism has. Lama Surya Das refers to them as principles of enlightenment, or principles of enlightened leadership, which is a more Western way of describing it, I think. The cultivation of the perfections are a way to work with karma, a way to work with ego. They are encouragements to work with karma and work with one's ego. We also have in Buddhism and in Zen precepts. And there are any number of precepts, but there are five or ten that are commonly taken or we used to have them up on that wall, but the precepts are things like not taking life, not taking that which isn't yours, not taking intoxicants, not speaking untruth. So the paramitas are expressed in a more positive fashion than the precepts, but they're very much related. So the Dana Paramita, giving, translated as giving. Sometimes it's called generosity. It's referred to as generosity, but generosity is actually a different Sanskrit word. But sometimes it's translated as generosity. So what it is it's unattached generosity, boundless openness, open heart, open mind, open soul, open hand. And the Dana Paramita is considered the antidote to one of the three poisons. And that's kind of where I started this whole thing. The Kshanti, or patience, or forbearance as a virtue, as a perfection, is an antidote to hatred. And Dana, or giving, is the antidote to... Anybody want to take a guess?
Greed.
So you have those. So you have, and then the third poison or the third klesha is delusion, and wisdom, another one of the paramitas, is the antidote to delusion. So one cultivates giving to work with greed, to work with attachment, to work with clinging. one cultivates the art of giving. There are all sorts of stories in about the Buddha in his previous lives that of how he gave of himself, how he gave selflessly. The folk tales about his previous lives, there are a number, and I find them kind of cute. There's one where the Buddha in a previous life was a rabbit, and a Brahmin was coming home, and there was a wealthy Brahmin was coming home, and there was nothing to eat in the house. So the Buddha roasted himself so that there would be something to eat when the Brahmin got home. There's another story about a previous life of the Buddha. He was a king in a previous life, a very wealthy king, and he gave away everything. He gave away everything that he owned. So all he had was the clothes on his back. And then a swarm of mosquitoes came by. And so King Shibi cut himself to give up food for the mosquitoes. And then kind of a classic one is that at one point the Buddha saw a tigress who was hungry and starving and was about to eat its babies, the little tigers. And the Buddha threw down his life for the tigress to eat so that she wouldn't eat the baby cats. I'd like to talk about Dana Paramita, giving in three ways. One, to talk about it as an innate, its innateness, then as its internal manifestations and its external manifestations. And I'd also like to talk a little bit about practices that we can do to encourage giving. And although I'm going to talk about it this way, that really is just a way to talk about the paramita. There's nothing special about it. So externally, giving is giving. It's giving traditionally. It's giving alms, giving food, and giving teaching. That's how it's thought of, and that's the relationship between lay people and monks. Lay people give alms and food, and the monks give teaching. So there's an exchange there. But it's giving of any material wealth, and we all do it all the time. And it's wealth, it's money, when you give to a cause, when you give to a charity, when you give to the Zen Center, when you give to a brother who's broke, when you give to a political candidate who represents the values you'd like to see in the community. You're giving in that way all the time of money, of wealth. But you also give all the time, you're giving your own time, your own talent. When you do something selflessly for another, when you listen to them, listen to a person who's talking about their stresses or their problems, or you spend some time with playing with a kid, you're always giving. You're always giving in your day-to-day activities. Some of the practices that enhance this or encourage this kind of giving I'll talk about two. One is it's called the ninth preliminary reflection on hate. And the Buddha was describing practices that one could use when you hated somebody. And he put forward eight of them, and things like recognizing a practice of recognizing that person in another life might have been your father or your mother or your brother, might have done good things for you. So all sorts of ways to reduce hate. But the ninth one, if all of those fail, The ninth one is send the person a present. Pretty simple. But that's when everything else fails. You just, with no attachment, no wanting to zing them, just send a gift. I've never tried it, so I don't know if it works or not, but I'd be curious if any of you do that. Then another way, another practice that we, when we have retreats here, when we have sessions, we're going to do it in just a minute, when we have a Dharma talk. We dedicate merit. We dedicate merit. And that is a practice that of giving, a practice that encourages giving. So what it is, for those of you who don't know, we will often, after we've done some spiritual effort, whether it's sitting zazen or listening to a Dharma talk or whatever it is, we'll often chant at the end of that a dedication of merit, where we say, whatever positive spiritual energy, wholesome energy has been generated, we give it out into the world. Sometimes we give it out generally. Sometimes we give it out very specifically to a specific person or a specific category of people. So on your program today, we have the chant that we sing after when we're in a sesshin and we're having food, and so the tables, we're all sitting and the tables come out and the servers wash the tables and they hand out roasted sesame, which is the only condiment we have, and we unfold our bowls, and it's all very elegant and simple. And before we eat, we recite this chant. And so I'd like, for those of you who have it, I'd like to actually recite it aloud. So we regard greed as the obstacle of mind. We regard this meal as medicine to sustain our life. For the sake of enlightenment, we now receive this food. O spirits, we now give you an offering. This food is for all of you in the 10 directions. First, this is for the 3 treasures. Next, for the 4 benefactors. Finally, for the beings in the 6 realms. May all be equally nourished. The first is to end all evil. The second is to cultivate all good. The third is to free all beings. May we all realize the Buddha way. So right at the top, we talk about greed. We as human beings live a paradoxical life. We have this wonderful precept of not taking life, not killing. We can't live for more than a nanosecond without killing. The destruction and rising and falling of life is happening constantly, and we rely on it for our own being. Greed is we have to have food. We have to have food, and here we are in this little retreat, a spiritual support group, and oftentimes in a retreat, when it's silent for day after day after day, sometimes food becomes a fixation. It really becomes, what's the next meal going to be? For right out of the box, dealing with greed, and that, it's that attachment to, we need it. We need greed to some extent. We need food. We need to kill. So we regard greed as the obstacle of mind. Attachment, clinging, what noble truth is that? Second, I guess. And we regard this meal as medicine to sustain our lives. For the sake of enlightenment, we now take this food. So we're backing off, and we are in basically setting up the taking of food as medicine to sustain our lives. I mean, there's this circle coming in and going out. Oh, spirits, we now give you an offering. This food is for all of you in the ten directions. It's for the universe, the ten directions, the universe. First, it's for the three treasures. The three treasures being Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Next, for the four benefactors. I think the four benefactors are... parents, teachers, nation, and all beings. So, is that it? That's it. All right. So it's for all of the ancestors that have brought us here. Next, for the beings in the six realms. So that's all. It's the six realms from heaven to hell and everything in between. May all be equally nourished. So as I take this food, may murderers and saints all be equally nourished. First, to end all evil. Second, to cultivate all good. Third, to free all beings. That's the what is that? What is three pure precepts? Yeah. May we all realize the Buddha way. So, when we chant this, as we consume food, we attempt to move it out and dedicate it to the entire world. May our life be sustained by this, and may we take it out into the world for all beings. Likewise, when we say thanksgiving or grace at a meal, in other traditions, in Christian tradition, it's the same sense of giving with gratitude. And Aiken Roshi is called gratitude a specific kind of. How does he do it? There's a specific kind of compassion that arises with gratitude, the enjoyment of receiving as expressed in giving. So that's kind of the external giving. Internal, looking at giving internally, from an internal perspective, that is mindfulness in many ways. It's noticing when there's clinging and attaching and letting go of that, cultivating letting go in day-to-day activities. Breathing in and being present as you notice your ego active. A practice that's used or can be used for cultivating that kind of internal giving is Tonglin practice. And I know some people here do that more than I do, but it's a practice of breathing in suffering, breathing in the suffering of others. And it can be oftentimes can be a specific person, or it can be the suffering of the world. But on an in-breath, bringing that in and being aware of it. And then on exhalation, breathing out compassion and ease and joy. So that is a way of internally working with giving, because it is, again, kind of like a meal. You take in food and you give out to the universe. In this case, you're taking in suffering and giving out compassion into the universe. So innately, I want to talk a little bit about giving innately, or innate giving. I think giving is the nature of life. I mean, I think it is It is life. I think we, just as we can't not take life, we can't not give. As human beings, we are constantly in interaction with the world in ways that we are aware and in ways that we are not aware. Walt Whitman opens Leaves of Grass with, I celebrate myself, and I assume what I assume you shall assume, for every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. And I think that's the innate nature, that expresses the innate nature of giving, that as human beings, we are constantly in interaction with our environment. Mindfully, spiritually, physically, we're so interactive with our environment that we really are not other than our environment. And that's a process of exchange, and it's a process of giving constantly. With each breath, with each motion, with each thought, we are constantly giving out into the universe. I don't think there's any way to get away from giving. I think it's part of what it is to be a human being. In the practice, to cultivate giving at that level is zazen. It's simply sitting in silence and being aware of that constant exchange, interaction with the environment. No differentiation between self and other. The samadhi of self-fulfilling activity. So the paramita of giving, the perfection of giving, is in essence an inspiration to let go at all levels of ego in the world externally, the joy of giving to others, internally letting go, constantly letting go of attachments, and then innately just relaxing into and being joyful with the fact that we're, or the reality that we're constantly giving. I think with that, I'm going to close. Does anybody have any questions? Comments?
I wanted to question your logic on giving and being an engagement with the environment and the difference between that and pollution. I mean, I understand the sense you're doing it, but there's, you know, this whole being in dialogue with your environment is being giving. Well, then there's a lot of generosity that's a little,
a little toxic.
Critique to themselves,
yeah. A little toxic.
Repeat it.
Yeah, Bill was asking about or challenging the concept of giving, as an exchange with the environment, particularly when it's pollution. And I think when it's pollution, when it's toxic.
Because it gets kind of the difference between giving and taking. You know, it's like, well, it's nice to see that it's this sort of reciprocal relationship, but there's also a question.
Yeah, and it is questionable in taking, you know, well, taking is we have to do it. I mean, you know, it's part of that interaction. But then doing it in a mindful way so that we don't take more than we need. And there's probably something similar in giving as opposed to just exploding, you know, and just being, but a mindful giving, mindful interaction or transaction.
I feel like pollution, it seems like we're kind of losing sight. You're taking fuel. That's part of taking. And so not taking more than we need, not driving more than we actually need. And I mean, the actual pollution is just a byproduct of taking. It's not, that's not what we're giving. It's the same process of burning fuel, taking fuel from the air.
Yeah, and it's the same imbalance. I mean, we consume more and we put out more. I've been particularly around pollution and population. This is going off. But you know, I was talking to Bill about this the other day. For some reason, the election of Obama has given me the freedom to think about, particularly, maybe become active around issues of population and consumption. So I've been looking at figures, like how many people there are on the face of the earth right now, and how fast that's increasing, and how much petroleum we consume in a second on the face of the earth. And when you think about petroleum and pollution in that way, you know, we're taking life form, carbon, which is life that has been generated over millions of years, and is now in the form of petroleum, and like in a period of a century, we'll like sap millions of years of life, the energy stored, and just like a hawk, I mean, just eliminate it. And I think it really, I find it fascinating. I mean, it's kind of where we are. It's what we're doing. And then how to mindfully not be overwhelmed by that, but to be mindful of it and be mindful of how much we take and how much we are giving out of the polluting into the environment. Anyways, it's not. Other questions? Yes.
So, another word that I like that A.P. Roshi uses for Donna was with the relinquishment.
Yeah.
You know, the giving up that you were talking about with the Buddha. And I'm leading a study group somewhere else on these, and this woman came in. Some of you have heard this, was talking about, she was in the suburbs, and she had these two Mormon young men wandering the streets looking for something to do, and there was a big snowstorm, and everybody was just kind of shutting them out. And she was shoveling her walk, and so they offered to help her shovel her walk. And at first she was like, oh, I'm not going to interact with these guys. And then she said, she kind of let that go and relinquished her ideas of the Mormons knocking on the door, and they helped her shovel her walk. And so she allowed them to help her. You know, she kind of relinquished her ideas of who these guys were. And so when we kind of relinquish our ideas of who somebody is or what something is, I think that we can kind of break down the wall. We're kind of giving each other something. There's a real generosity there. And, you know, kind of not closing off a connection that can happen. And I think that's a real good example of that. You know, it's kind of like we all have our ideas of how we do things, and when we let go of them, there's a possibility of making connection.
Mm-hmm.
I love that story she told. I want to share that.
You know, in that same vein, one of the things that, one of the biggest lessons I ever had about Donna Farmiga was we all have times in our lives when we are in extreme crisis. You know, something really terrible has happened. You know, and I've had a couple of those, and everybody wants to help. You know, everybody wants to help, and we are so. We are so well taught to be independent. No, oh no, no thanks, no thanks, you know. And the thing that I learned at one of those times is that it's a real act of generosity to let those other people help. Because they're standing there watching you in pain. And to let them, to give up that sense of, you know, I can deal with this or, you know, whatever. And to allow them to do some little thing is an act of generosity on our part to accept their generosity. And before I had been in those situations, you know, I sort of knew that in my head. But anyway, what you said just reminded me of that.
Yeah, in both cases, it's kind of like a softening. And opening. Yes, Manoj.
So, I think another tool is listening too. So, you know, listening to people, you can give in your time, but you actually flows the other way. So, and I think in all of these parameters, as well as the precepts, nothing is fixed. You know? It's not like commandments where things can go in one direction. It's very fluid and it's all depend on each other too, because pollution is, you know, just giving, but it also violates the no killing precept. So some of that's a connection. So once you make the connection, then things fall in place.
Other questions or comments?
Ben? Could I just quote the end of that meal chant that says, what's it say, the emptiness
of this world of this?
The emptiness of the three wheels, giver,
receiver and gift.
That's all.
Yes.
Actually, when you started talking, I was thinking about the opportunity I had several years ago to spend some time in the North Slope of Alaska, where I came in contact with the Inupiat culture up there. And people there have lived in that environment for 1,000 years in a sustainable way. And mainly, the thing that allows me to do that, of course, is harvesting whales, because that gives them enough calories to get through the year. But one of the basic ideas of the culture is that it's only to the extent that they lead virtuous lives that the whales offer up their bodies, for the sustenance of the community. And of course, when the whaling captain is successful, his crew is successful at harvesting the whale, and of course it's distributed as a gift to the community, and especially to the elders and other people who can't actively.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the final thing about this culture is, of course, it's a subsistence-based hunting culture. And a lot of time is spent by the men poised over poles chopped in the ice, with spear at the ready, not moving.
Anything else?